but that's the old me. Out in, out of my windows rolled down, 'cause I don't care anymore, said I don't care.
Let's go. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great weekend. Hope we can make your weekend a little bit better as we get just a little bit closer to Halloween. And joining me to do so, please welcome from the Pop Culture Knowledge Channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
Thanks for having me. I love this time of year, Julio. This is, as a lifelong horror fan, more than anything, it's just an excuse to overindulge in all of the different things that I love about the horror genre. And I have had conversations with my lovely wife, Victoria, many times over the last, couple of weeks in particular, but over the years, we've circled back around to it. And that is just kind of the conversation about what it is that people get out of horror movies, right? There are obviously going to be people in the camp of like, it's disturbing. If you're watching stuff like this, is it somehow affecting your psyche? Is there something about the catharsis of, experiencing these kind of emotions under a controlled environment? But I guess more than the psychological conversation, just for you, what is it that you enjoy about horror movies?
I mean, I think that's part of it. I think it's like you said, I think when you get down to the roots of why people like horror, why people like things like haunted houses, it is that catharsis of being able to be scared in an environment where you know nothing truly bad is going to happen to you. You get to, and I think, that doesn't mean you're still not going to see something that might not, disturb you or whatever, but you're not going to die.
Right. Follow up. Do you think that horror movies are inherently a little bit misogynistic? Do you think that perception is dated? Or do you feel like there's something, almost empowering about it? And obviously we're talking from the male perspective about the female perspective, but I think there's conversations to be had, like women experience more terror in horror movies than men do. Is that like some repressed psychological thing, or do you think it's just something more functional of storytelling?
I think it's functional of the industry and the culture. I don't think there is anything inherently misogynistic about the genre or any genre. There is just the inherent misogyny in the movie industry and the inherent misogyny in our culture. And I think I think the same is true, not just it's when you have had only largely a white male perspective, then everything's going to come from a white male perspective, and everything that's not white male is going to, suffer in the process. And I think, it's interesting, when you take that to a wider perspective and look at some of the criticism that's out there of Martin Scorsese's new movie, Killers of the Flower Moon, which I think has some very noble intentions in going out and bringing to light, the history of the awful things that happened to the Osage, and how the how white people came in and stole their murdered their people and stole their oil rights. Still, the movie really comes from a very white male perspective. It really centers on Leonardo DiCaprio's character to tell this story. The book that it was based on focused more on the FBI agents and the birth of the FBI, and the character who ended up being played by Jesse Plemons in the movie, which interestingly enough was initially intended to be Leo's role, and they were going to go at it as more of a straight adaptation, and then Leo got more interested in this other character, who's really kind of a I don't want to say sympathetic villain, but a little bit more sympathetic villain than the main villain at any rate. But again, you know, you're talking about a white male filmmaker, an older white male filmmaker, Martin Scorsese, telling the story from a white male perspective instead of from, you know, the perspective of maybe a native filmmaker who might bring something more, you know, I don't know if genuine is the right word, but, you know, a person that we both respect a lot, Devery Jacobs, who was, of course, on Reservation Dogs and is a writer herself, was a writer on Reservation Dogs in addition to being one of the stars of that show. Kind of put out a whole big thread on social media discussing her reservations with this film. And it's really interesting and really accurate. And I think that really applies to horror too. I think, you know, to a lot of extent, you see a lot of women as the victims because our society has said that women are more vulnerable. And so we're, you know, they're going to be more in peril and we're going to be more afraid if it's a female victim than a male victim.
And that's kind of where I ask you, because I agree with what you're saying, you know, are women perceived as more vulnerable or are women more vulnerable? Is it like the David and Goliath thing? And I do think horror movies catch a kind of bad rap. Now, don't get me wrong. Within the horror community, there are people who are probably a little sadistic and they go watch movies because they want to see the violence inflicted upon the characters. Mm-hmm. But then I also think there are people, and especially in the Scream franchise, where we empathize with the victims and we want to see these strong female final girls persevere. And there's something maybe empowering about that. So, like, I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all, but I do agree with you. I think if we're going to look at horror movies in a microcosm, we have to, like, back up enough to realize that this is something that's intrinsic to society, and it will permeate every different aspect of it.
I think the development of the final girl as a feminist icon is something that has come along the lines. I don't think it was something that was ever intended, but I want to say the real turning point is, and you can argue with me about whether this is a horror movie or not, but it's Sigourney Weaver and Alien.
That's a great point.
You know, that is where I think it really starts. And I think since then we have seen a lot of characters that have come along that absolutely start out with that as the idea. I think
you look at like Wes Craven's Last House on the Left versus A Nightmare on Elm Street, and you can really see personal growth within Craven as a storyteller, because I think there's some really problematic aspects of that whole subgenre Last House on the Left belongs to. But then moving forward, I think Wes has given us some of the absolute best female protagonists.
Well,
in horror.
Yeah. I mean, you're looking at Heather Langenkamp in Nightmare on Elm Street, but then you're also looking at Sydney and to a lesser extent, Gale in Scream.
Yes, absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, absolutely. We're going to spend the whole show today, since we're coming up on Halloween on Tuesday, kind of delving into horror movies and the horror genre, and just kind of, you know, we both love this stuff and hopefully you do too. And just seemed like a good way to celebrate the season. But wanted to mention too, that if you are a fan of horror, especially the history of the horror and getting into more of the deeper and maybe some of the not necessarily as great movies, that we've got a brand new season of Nightmare Theater getting ready to debut on locally here on WSRE. This is our local homegrown horror host show that stars Mike Ensley as the Baron Mondo von Doren, Chip Chisholm as his manservant El Sapo de Tempesto, Lemmy Cruz as Mittens the Werewolf, and then I'm on the show in a small role as the curator talking about movie props and movie history. But the new season's getting ready to debut on Halloween. The first new episode's going to debut Halloween night at 10 p.m. on WSRE, or you can stream anytime on the PBS app for free also. So this season, episodes will debut on the PBS app as they debut on air. But we're going to start with Manos, The Hands of Fate on Halloween night.
Nice.
And then new episodes at 10 p.m. on Saturdays. So we hope folks will check that out. We'll be back in a moment with more. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Oh,
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I'm your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Knowledge Channel on YouTube. Happy Halloween, everyone. We are excited to be delving into one of our favorite subjects and getting kind of deep into the world of horror movies and horror entertainment. Just something that Jeremy and I both really love, and hopefully you do too. You know, that song's from one of my favorite horror movies, Killer Clowns from Outer Space, the theme song by the Dickies. And I don't know if it's the best song to get into the topic that we're going to get into, but I don't care because I love the song and it just fits the season and fits where we're going a little bit. And maybe arguably the Killer Clowns might merit being included in the conversation we're going to have. But I wanted to talk about the icons of horror, you know, kind of who are the creatures, the monsters, the homicidal maniacs, you name it, who are the people that are, you know, within the wider pop culture, not just to horror fans, but like everybody recognizes, everybody knows, and everybody inarguably says belongs as, you know, one of the icons of horror. And I think that there are arguably two eras of that, Jeremy, and you let me know if you agree with that. I think we kind of start with kind of really the birth of the movie industry, you know, going back to the 20s, 30s, 40s, and into the very early 50s, and looking primarily at the Universal monsters here. So we're talking Dracula, we're talking the Frankenstein monster, the Bride of Frankenstein, the Wolfman, the creature from the Black Lagoon, who is kind of the last one chronologically of that group. There's some others in there that, you know, you can argue whether they belong in there or not. The Mummy, the Invisible Man,
Jekyll, and the Phantom,
Jekyll and Hyde, the Phantom,
all of them. Yeah. Oh yeah, Jekyll and Hyde.
I think in general, at least, you know, those first five, nobody's going to argue with. Nobody's going to say Dracula, Frankenstein monster, Bride of Frankenstein, Wolfman, and the Gill Man aren't all-time icons.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I feel like Lon Chaney Jr. in particular needs to get a shout-out for portraying just the quintessential version of the Wolfman. We got Bela Lugosi as Dracula. And then, of course, Boris Karloff, who not only portrayed the Frankenstein's monster, but also portrayed the Mummy. And, like, just what a iconic face. And, you know, him and what was the guy's name who did the prosthetics for a lot of the Universal monsters?
Well, I mean,
unfortunately, that's escaping me right now.
Lon Chaney did a lot of his own work.
As did Boris Karloff, but there was Dick. Y'all let us know in the comments section if you're familiar, but yeah, these are a couple of the people that were like pioneers of the horror genre, and I guess we could kind of consider this the golden age of horror, kind of where it all started as far as horror cinema goes.
Yeah, and you know, we should mention Elsa Lancaster as the bride in there too, for sure.
Absolutely.
And then the Gill Man was played by a number of actors, but I think perhaps most memorably in the original, even in the original movie, it was more than one actor in the suit. But our friend Rico Browning, who did all of the underwater scenes as the creature, is
which was shot in Wakulla Springs here in Florida.
It was. And Rico, we just lost him in the last several months. The last living Universal monster.
R.I.P.
Rico Browning. We lost him earlier this year. So, you know, always worth mentioning special, you know, him special, just for, again, you know, kind of outlasting everybody else. But, you know, he'd come to visit us here in Pensacola a couple of times at PensaCon. So, you know, we have a little bit of a special connection with him. So
I don't think we could argue about all of those being iconic. And a lot of those Universal monsters were kind of reintroduced in the Hammer era, but while we're talking about Universal specifically, do you have a favorite movie from that time?
It's Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Oh, good pick, man. I like that it's outside the box. I think a lot of people would probably point to The Bride of Frankenstein. That one seems to be popular pick.
If you're asking me which one is the best one, it's probably Bride of Frankenstein. But if you're asking me which one I like,
it's a beautiful looking movie, but
yeah, that, there's two different things there.
I agree.
And those characters have continued to be icons through the years and have continued to be, you know, brought back occasionally. I mean, we just had at least two Dracula movies this year with Renfield.
Yeah, they will never stop.
Renfield and Last Voyage of the Demeter. We continue to have werewolf movies. We continue to have vampire movies. We continue to have, not so much with the Gillman, although, you know, we did have kind of a character based on the Gillman in Shape of Water a few years ago that won the Academy Award.
Yeah.
We don't see as many Frankenstein's monster type creatures, but yeah, you know, again, these are the, and they're going to be again. You know, in fact, Guillermo del Toro has been talking about making a Frankenstein movie for years, and apparently looks like it's moving forward at Netflix. Although Guillermo always has 9 million things he's working on, so
he does. Long-standing tradition of that.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. But then you get so if those are your big icons of that period, I think the next period we get into where we get the true icons of horror comes into being starting around 73, and then I think it's arguable where it ends. But I think we're talking about here, we're getting into what's considered the slasher era, although it's arguable whether every character that you would say this about is necessarily a slasher per se. We could argue about what the definition of a slasher is, and that's maybe another topic for another time. But It really starts with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It starts with Leatherface in 73. There's some other things that are maybe precursors, you know, that are in there that came out a little earlier. But Leatherface is the first icon of that era, if you mm-hmm. ask me. You know, some people might argue about it, but I think that's fair to say. Your next one chronologically is going to be Michael Myers. And yes, Halloween is derivative of Black Christmas, which came before it, and some
whatever.
There, everything's got roots, you know.
Yeah,
it's that simple. You know, you're talking about all those original Universal monsters; they're all based on books, you know. So there's roots there. But I'd say Michael Myers definitely has managed to just become that level of icon that's instantly recognizable. Your next one is Jason Voorhees. You know, Friday the 13th in 1980, even though we didn't actually really see Jason in that movie, that is the film that established Jason and continues to be an instantly recognizable figure, despite the fact that we haven't seen a Friday the 13th film in a while. And then I think the inarguable fourth there is Freddy Krueger, Nightmare on Elm Street. Continues to just loom large and just continues to be an icon. Again, even though we haven't seen him on the screen in a while. So first of all, before we go any further, Jeremy, do you agree with that assessment on those four as being like the big four of that period?
I think it's inarguable. I think you nailed it. Now, when you do say it's debatable where it ends, we do have the kind of postmodern addition to the slasher franchise, which came about with Wes Craven's, just again, seminal reinvention of what horror could do. And that was with Ghostface and Scream.
Okay. But so let's break that down a little bit, because I think we've got two topics that veer off from there. One is that if there's this kind of club that rises up in the 70s and 80s of icons, does it end and then another club starts with maybe somebody like Ghostface, or does Ghostface belong in that club? And is that club still continuing to this day? Because Ghostface still is very much continuing. We just had a new Scream movie at the start of this year.
As does Michael Myers, and point taken, and that's what I'm kind of to pass it back to you, to put the baton back in your hands. Is there a contemporary of Ghostface? Could we build a Mount Rushmore of 90s and 2000s horror icons that fit in that mold?
Well, let's first get into who else sprung up in the 70s and 80s and maybe very early 90s that would be worthy of inclusion with that Mount Rushmore, if you will, of icons. I think, some of the candidates that people bring up a lot, I would say Chucky is in that conversation.
Absolutely.
I would say Pinhead from the Hellraiser franchise is in that conversation.
For sure.
But then, you get a little dubious once you get past them. If we're going to say Ghostface is a separate, I think Ghostface is an icon. I'm arguing that Ghostface belongs mentioned in the same breath, but does he start his own group or is he part of that group is where it gets into semantics. And so if that's the semantics you're getting into, then you're thinking about maybe Candyman.
Candyman, great choice.
But is Candyman is kind of more towards the same era as Scream. I think it came out a little bit before Scream, but it was like...
Then 90. Let's pull Candyman and Ghostface and go from there as far as 90s icons. I like that.
Yeah. Well, okay, so if you're going to do that, then who else goes in that category?
Pennywise
could go either way because it also depends on which version you're talking about. Because the original Tim Curry version from the TV miniseries was 1990. You could make the argument that he belongs with the 80s icons. Or if you're talking about the more modern version that was played by Skarsgård, that's a little later. We've got to take it. We'll come back to this. We got to take a break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
In the October with the steamboats, ancient goblins and wallows, come at the grand light making a sound. The smell of death is all around. And at night when the cold wind blows, no one cares, nobody knows. I don't wanna be buried in a pet cemetery.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube, and we're talking about the icons of horror. We kind of got into the conversation, and I meant to go back to Jeremy during that conversation where we kind of said, this group that springs up in the 70s and 80s with again, the big four inarguably being Leatherface, Michael Myers, Jason Voorhees, and Freddy Krueger. And then I think we kind of agree that you can throw Chucky in there, you can throw Pinhead in there. But my beloved Killer Clowns that we were talking about before the break. You think we can include the Killer Clowns in that group?
Name one.
Rudy, Jumbo, Fatso.
Oh, no.
Shorty.
I asked the wrong person. Fine. We'll throw them in there for you.
Here's the thing. At the time, no. But over the years, in the past few years, there's just been like a real resurgence and interest in that film and those characters.
You're not wrong. Yeah.
There's a lot of merchandise now. There's a lot of, and there's supposedly a video game sequel in the works. So, I feel like they have kind of become at least somewhat iconic, maybe more to just the real horror heads, but there's a fine line there, and I'm going to throw one more at you that, again, I don't know if it falls into that group or if it falls into, this kind of later group that we're talking about, because I think the movie came out, I want to say 92. And this is going to be a controversial one I'm going to throw at you, because there's always the argument that that's not really a horror movie. And I don't necessarily disagree with it. Hannibal Lecter.
Oh, yeah.
Do we consider Hannibal Lecter a horror character? Is Silence of the Lambs and its surrounding movies with Hannibal Lecter, is that a horror franchise?
I think my issue with this pick, which also bumps us into inconsistency in my logic. First of all, Ghostface is not Supernatural, so my argument sort of goes out the window, but I don't look at Silence of the Lambs as a classic horror film because it is so rooted in the same kind of reality and true crime as something like Seven. And as iconic as John Doe is, I don't think he belongs in the conversation of greatest horror icons. What do you think?
I think he's become horrifying for another reason, but that's neither here nor there. But then you make that argument, but not all of the people that were put in that 80s group were necessarily, at least at the start, in any way supernatural. Leatherface is not supernatural.
Absolutely.
And I mean, there may be, you know, later things where, you know, some of these people, like, they seem unkillable or, you know, whatever, but Leatherface was not supernatural. Michael Myers, at least in the beginning, was not supernatural.
And Hannibal's got an iconic mask. So, I mean, there's an argument to be made.
Yeah. I tend to not group Hannibal into that category, but, you know, it's one of those things that always comes up. And he definitely is a recognizable icon, whether you consider him a horror icon or not, maybe another story. He's a cinematic icon, without a doubt.
Yeah.
And it's just that kind of thing of, well, it just, do you consider that horror or not? And we can have that semantic discussion about a lot of things, and I think we're probably about to. Because, all right, let's put him aside. Let's say we're going to say that there's a new group that starts in the 90s, and it's... And that group starts with our good friend Ghostface, who continues to this day. So, like, if we're going to say that, I think that given that the Scream movies haven't really gone away, you know, they've continued to be made here into the 2020s. I mean, we had a little gap in there, right? How long was it between 3 and 4?
14
and then,
years, I think.
14 years between 3 and 4 or between 4 and 5?
Uh-huh. Between 3 and 4.
And then how long between 4 and 5?
Off the top of my head, 7 to 8 years.
Okay. So you could make an argument for it being a resurgence, just like, you know, the Halloween reboot resurged Michael Myers, et cetera. But, and maybe this is the, you know, the typical Gen X mentality where we find it hard to believe that, you know, 93 was actually 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was. Sorry, guys. Hate to break it to you, but it was. I feel like it's fair to start a new era that has not ended yet with Ghostface.
Okay. I like that.
So then
I've got a ton of additions to it.
Okay. So let's hear your proposals. And we kind of already talked about Candyman as possibly being one of them. Who would you propose belongs at that same iconic level as the Universal Monsters and the 80s superstar slashers that are so beloved that are the characters that are the new icons?
How about I fire them off and then we argue about whether or not you think that they belong? Because when you say as iconic as the Universal Monsters, I don't know about that, man. But we'll see what you think. So Samara from The Ring, okay. Jigsaw from Saw, The Nun, Captain Spaulding from the Rob Zombie movies, more recently Art the Clown, and a little bit before that was Sam from Trick or Treat.
Okay. Sam is one you will not have any fight from me on. Sam, even though Sam's only been in one film.
Isn't that crazy?
He has absolutely been an icon, and we definitely need another Trick or Treat film at some point. It just needs to happen.
Get Bryan Singer out of it.
What's that?
Just keep Bryan Singer out of it this time.
Yeah, well, he wasn't like super directly involved in that. He was a producer on it, but he wasn't, you know. That wasn't his baby or anything like that. So, yeah, I don't think there's any problem with keeping Bryan Singer out of that. That's fine. But that movie definitely deserves your attention and your respect. And I think Sam has become that level of icon. So I will go ahead and say we can put, if we're putting a new modern Mount Rushmore of horror together, I'll put Sam next to Ghostface with no argument whatsoever.
Okay. Okay.
I will reluctantly have to agree, much to my chagrin, that Jigsaw belongs up there too.
Okay.
I'm not a fan of the franchise.
Back to our conversation about Supernatural and Hannibal Lecter. A, is Saw a horror movie? And B, are we talking about Jigsaw? Or are we talking about Billy the Puppet?
I think we're really talking about Billy the Puppet being the image, but Billy the Puppet is Jigsaw.
Okay, fair.
You, you know, so, I mean, I think that's getting into semantics, but Billy's the image.
Yep.
But we all know that Jigsaw is what's behind Billy. So, you know, that's going to be the face that you see, but it's going to be Jigsaw that we all think of. I think it's a good semantic argument as to whether Saw is horror or not, or whether it's just like torture porn. But I would say that while I think it's just torture porn, I think that the horror community as a whole has outvoted me on that.
Agreed.
I think
iconography is there.
Yeah, the iconography is there, and not my favorite, not something I enjoy, but yeah, Jigsaw is inarguably the third there.
All right, what next?
Then who's the fourth? What else, you know, what else has become that iconic? Is there a fourth? Is there enough to call it, you know, I don't think we're there with the Nun. Now, where we may be there might be Annabelle.
Oh, that's a good addition. That's a really good addition.
Yeah. I mean, because you got to think, too, beyond just the movies, what are the things that have become, you know, the faces? What are the things that have become the merchandise? You know, you could go out there and buy like 12 different iterations of Annabelle dolls. Versus,
but
you know,
you've been to enough cons to probably be able to speak to how often cosplayed something like Samara is from The Ring.
You get some, but you know, there's not a ton of Samara merchandise. I think she's one that the horror heads know, and I think she's one that the general public kind of knows, but they don't know her name. Like they know the long black hair and the crawling out of the well and then jumping out of the TV, but that if you ask 9 people out of 10 to name her, they're not going to get it.
I think that's fair.
Yeah,
I think
that's
fair.
I mean, I think that she's in the conversation, but she's in the conversation at a lower level than, you know, kind of like the same way we said, you know, Chucky or Pinhead or you know, at a real stretch, and I admit it's a real stretch, the Killer Clowns come in. Samara is at that kind of lower level. But I think that you can make an argument for those four that we've said there, maybe being the new icons. And then, you know, Candyman, although the era kind of slides a little bit, maybe belongs in there. You know, there's some other things that I think, you know, have become iconic films, but they don't have that kind of iconography. Like Get Out is a great example. Get Out is absolutely an iconic horror film, but what are you putting there as the image? The image you think of is
Art the Clown.
What's that?
Where are you at with Art the Clown from The Terrifier series, originally All Hallows Eve?
Too new to make a call yet.
I have a feeling that he is going to be looked at as one of our contemporary great villains. Now, with
hold that thought. Let's come back to that. We've got to take a break. You listen to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
From the cradle bars comes a beckoning voice that sends spinning. You have no choice. You hear laughter
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I'm your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Brinch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. And we're talking about the icons of horror. And Jeremy, I want to get back to your point about Art the Clown and the Terrifier franchise that is a relatively new potential addition to this elite club that we're talking about. But I wanted to very quickly talk about, there's a couple of characters that I think people might think of that really don't belong in this kind of iconography that we've been talking about, but are absolutely icons of the horror genre. And they don't fit because they're the heroes.
I think
it can go back to earlier in the show, we mentioned Ellen Ripley from Alien is absolutely, in that group. Although, certainly the Xenomorph, and again, that gets into the semantics of is Alien horror or not. First Alien is definitely a horror movie. Maybe some of the later ones not, but the first Alien is absolutely a horror movie. Ash Williams from the Evil Dead franchise is absolutely an icon of horror, but is not a villain. We talked about Get Out, and I think that when people think about Get Out, what they think of is the shocked face of Daniel Kaluuya with a tear rolling down his face. That's the iconic image of Get Out, but Daniel Kaluuya is the hero of that film.
And then
I think that song that we just heard, Spellbound by Susie and the Banshees, was the last thing we heard so far, and God knows with the strike and everything when we will hear more, but the last thing we heard in Stranger Things.
Which has
absolutely become an iconic horror series. And yes, there are some iconic villainous images in those. The Demogorgon is iconic. Vecna is iconic. But the icon is Eleven. Eleven is absolutely the symbol of that franchise and is absolutely an icon of horror. But she's a hero.
And yeah, that's a good point.
So, I mean, I think you could have maybe there's another Mount Rushmore of horror heroes, and we can argue about who belongs on that. I mean, Laurie Strode, obviously. But there's some others that we could argue about and have that conversation. But let's get back to that. And we could also argue whether Stranger Things belongs in that group that starts in the 90s or not, or if we have a new group starting, then, where that happens. But Art the Clown, we were talking about. And, want to mention in just the fact, mentioning Art the Clown and the Terrifier franchise, which, again, is a fairly new horror franchise. The first film came out in 2016, although the character, I think, was in a short film before that. And
He was in something called All Hallows Eve. He was featured in all three stories in the anthology.
Yeah, character was created by Damien Leone, who has also written and directed the two Terrifier films. And is played by David Howard Thornton. Want to mention that both of them will be at Pensacon this February. So if you are a fan of Terrifier, if you like Art the Clown, if you want to kind of see who maybe a lot of the kids think is the next horror icon, then come out and see Art the Clown and his creator at Pensacon February 23rd through 25th in downtown Pensacola. I think there's going to be a lot of excitement about that. I think there's legitimate excitement around this character and this franchise. I just don't know that I'm ready to put him on that pedestal yet, but you seem to have another argument for that, Jeremy, so let's hear it out.
I think there's a case to be made, and it does slightly tie into our age. Like, as you get older, time goes much faster. Somebody saw Terrifier 1 at a very pivotal time in their life, and maybe they were 13 when they saw the first one, and then they're 20 when the second one comes out. That's a substantial amount of time in a young person's life. So I don't know that Art the Clown is there yet, and I'm not going to tell you that. I think that's outright incorrect to say that he hasn't been around long enough. And the movies aren't all great. It feels like Damien Leone has a really great character, and he's really trying to nail down the right narrative for this character. But there's something about David Howard Thornton's performance that just, it's so good. I think it's instantly creepy the way that he looks. So, like, I have a feeling that this is going to be a character that is very revered. And that makes me think about maybe some other ones that I don't even know if they're up and coming. They've been around for a while, but I wonder if they will stand the test of time. Let's start with the Babadook, Julio.
Okay, well, and I want to make a point, too, here, whereas I'm saying 2016 film, the character's too new, but Annabelle came out in 2014.
Yeah.
And yeah, I know she was in one of the Conjuring films before that, but, you know, that's kind of a weird line to draw, you know what I mean? So maybe Annabelle belongs in a new group, and maybe it's Annabelle and Art the Clown, and maybe we need somebody else on the 90s, early 2000s group. Maybe it's Candyman or something like that. So you can get into a lot of semantics about this kind of stuff, and,
sure,
and you and I will easily get into the weeds on that. But the Babadook, I think, has become something of an icon. Again, only one movie, but certainly an image that has stuck with a lot of people for sure. And I think
reason became a queer icon, which is random and funny, and I'm here for it.
Well, and I think another thing to consider when we're talking about this most modern era is that some of the characters you might think of, or that a lot of people might think of as icons, are not necessarily movie icons. They're online icons. That with the advent of creepypastas and all of that kind of stuff, you're talking about something like Slender Man.
That's a really good point.
And yeah, there was a Slender Man movie made, but that's not why people like Slender Man.
So is there another one that you can think of? I'm not super well versed on those, but Slender Man is like a great example of a modern urban legend.
Yeah, well, I think some things that might get considered to be in there somewhere, you might think about Black Phillip from The Witch.
Sure.
It's certainly something that has, started to show up on a lot of t-shirts and things like that. Getting into that whole like A24 school of modern horror, there's been some, some pretty iconic imagery, but it doesn't necessarily all fall on the villains. Like I think, of the image of Florence Pugh in the movie Midsommar with all the flowers and everything has absolutely become an iconic image in horror. But again, that's the protagonist. That's not the, without getting too much into what the film is, I don't know that that's an image I'd put up there. There's been some other films that have really caught on and hit people in the right way. We'll have to see what the future of the character is, but I think Megan, there's an argument.
I'm so glad you said that, yeah, because when you said Slender Man, and I'm thinking of like internet-fed popularity, there was the TikTok dance of Megan, and I feel like she really jumped towards the top of horror icons with just one movie.
And there's that image from the film Smile that came out last year of just that creepy smile across a bunch of different faces.
Yeah,
I don't know how that's going to last in the long term. I don't think, I don't guess we're going to get, is it Sosie Bacon? Am I saying her name correctly?
Yeah.
I don't know that we're going to get her back based on what happened in that film. But those are things that you can make an argument for. I think there's still a lot of creativity in the genre. I think there's a lot of stuff that sometimes maybe flies under the radar, and that's kind of the nature of horror. Sometimes it takes some time for these things to build up.
Yep.
I mean, that baby mask from the Happy Death Day movies is something that I think has become iconic in a lot of circles too. You get things like the masks from The Purge. The
mask from The Strangers.
Yeah. Or the clown guy from Twisted Metal is something that comes up a lot. And then a movie coming out this weekend, but has started as a gaming and online franchise that has certainly become a iconic horror-wise, Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is it Freddy Fazbear possibly, one of those icons? It could be. It's going to take time to discover what those icons are going to be in the long term. Getting into some other things, you think about how big The Walking Dead got to be, and that's absolutely a horror franchise. But what's your image? Is it a zombie? Well, we've had zombies since, the 60s?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
uh, So, but then is the image somebody, one of the characters like Daryl Dixon or
Coral.
Michonne or yeah, you know, any of them, you know, then you're getting into that's the hero. That's the icon. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, absolutely an icon, but she's a hero. You know, you're not going to put her on the villain. And I don't think you're putting, you know, Angel or Spike or somebody on there.
No.
So, you know, even though they're memorable villains on the show, it's just such a deep topic and it's such a great topic. So much so that, you know, folks will be honest with you. Jeremy and I had a bunch of other topics we wanted to get into over the course of the show this week. And we just ended up devoting the whole show to the icon. So we've got lots more, you know, in the future, we'll get into some more horror stuff for you because it's just a big passion for both of us. But Jeremy, I want to thank you for being here with me. And I want to thank all of you folks for listening. I hope that you have a wonderful Halloween. Go out, get scared, have a good time. Maybe I'll see you on Halloween night at the Handlebar for the Ritual Goth Night, which is going to be a lot of fun. Until next week, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.